Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Gio Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlipp from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the Lions are coming off of a 35-17 loss to the Green Bay Packers on Monday Night Football. We've got the Ravens coming in on Sunday, a 1 p.m. start. So the road doesn't get any, it might get slightly easier. We're going to talk about the state the Ravens are in right now, but, you know, the friendly confines of Ford Field might not be enough to overtake the Ravens on Sunday, but we'll save that till later.
Yeah. I tell you, you had in your projection 35-24, so you were off. You were one Lions touchdown away from having a perfect projection.
I felt too good about their offense. but when we got to halftime on Monday, I was like, oh boy. Yeah. Like, I'm way off. But things turned very Lion-y in the second half. You know, there's a lot of
2 weeks
stuff
in a
we've
row.
Always seen from the Lions. Totally different regime and different players.
Yeah, last 2 weeks in a row. And I mean, before we'll get into it in a minute, but 2 weeks in a row where they've had a short period of time where they just imploded and completely lost the game. And it was an unfortunate movie we've seen before.
Yeah. It's something to work on for the rest of the season, not imploding.
Because they look good in the first half, I thought.
Yeah, they played a real good first half. Peyton Manning thought they played a real good first half.
Well, I mean, the offensive line on its own was as impressive I've seen in a Detroit Lions offensive line in years, right? I mean,
they have a strength there. Now it's it's cemented, it's a strength.
Yeah, and that's minus Taylor Decker too, right? And I thought they were moving people in the run game. They were pass protecting. There were times where Jared Goff just had oodles of time. Just he sat back, went through all of his progressions, and then I think started them over again because he had run out of them, and he still had time to try and make a play. There was a couple of them like that. Offensive line I thought was something that can be a real good factor moving forward. And this week too, this week with the Ravens in their situation. So we'll get into it.
All right. First, let's start with the roster moves. Number one, Jamie Collins on the trade block, not participating in any practices or in the games anymore. Now, this is not shocking at all because he did something like this in Cleveland a few years back.
When he gets out of the Patriots system, he has struggled in the past, and I think a lot of people were anticipating this again. I thought he did okay in camp. I thought he had the right attitude, he seemed all right, but it's just something wasn't connecting, I guess, right? And they said that they felt maybe his effort wasn't there, and I think on Monday night that kind of showed up a little bit. Maybe they were hinting at trading him before, and that's why his Monday night effort wasn't as strong. You know what I mean?
His Monday night effort wasn't there as a nudge to them to trade
him. Yeah. When this happened is actually kind of interesting. Cause if they come to him, ahead of Monday night and they're like, hey, we're thinking about trading you. And he's like, yeah, just, give me a game, give me all the snaps you can in the game to show my value. And then the effort just isn't there. I don't know. Or maybe it was the Monday night showing that kind of started the wheels spinning. But regardless, they're saying nice things about him.
Of course. They got to get as much out of him as possible. They're not gonna say, no effort, and he's old and he can't move anymore. They're not gonna say stuff like that.
Yeah,
I mean, although Campbell did mention he wasn't giving any effort.
Yeah, not as much as Anzalone, anyways, right?
That's it's a quiet way of saying he's not giving effort.
Right.
Well, this guy gives effort all the time. Effort's like a big deal. Like that's the one thing you control as an NFL player, right? Is the amount of effort you give.
Yeah, and the focus shifted from he's not doing enough and the effort isn't there to we want to see our younger guys. And honestly, after Monday night, I think that's a valuable standpoint, you know, a deserved standpoint to say we need to see our younger guys, because the older guys aren't really cutting it right now. And Jamie Collins had a hard time. They asked him to do a lot of coverage against the backs, and he wasn't reading his keys right. He wasn't cutting through traffic the way he should have. And it just wasn't there. He's always been like a natural Mike, as well as he could do some interesting pass rushing things. And early in camp, they had him at the Mike and Anzalone at the Buck, and then they would flip him on third downs, where Anzalone would play the Mike, Davis would play the Buck, and then they would blitz Davis sometimes. I'm sorry, Collins. Thinking Jared Davis on my head, I guess. But they would blitz Collins sometimes, like on third downs, so they would kind of switch roles. And I think they started gravitating more towards that Anzalone at the mic role as things wore on. And I think they were liking more of what they see. I mean, there's things that Anzalone can do that Collins just wasn't able to, like, you know, he's more versed in the play calling, and you know, he's the leadership's there that apparently wasn't there. Or, you know, I'm speculating a bit here, but you know, Anzalone was a captain and Collins wasn't. So, I mean, obviously they thought the leadership was there with Anzalone better. Regardless, he's not going to be a Lion anymore, pretty much. They've been fielding offers. I have heard that they've been fielding offers, like legitimate. It's not just them saying that they've been fielding offers. I've heard that they have gotten some, and it seems like a matter of time before they find the right one and then make a deal to move Jamie Collins.
Fifth round pick, sixth round pick, seventh round pick. What's it going to be?
If they get a sixth, I think they'd be happy. You know what I mean? Right. Honestly, Here's the deal. If you cut them, you're taking a really big cap hit right now, because he's got a lot of guaranteed money due. But if you trade him, the guaranteed money like cuts in half, because some of the guaranteed money goes with the contract. And then because it's a trade, you can split it over more than 1 year, right? So they're going to owe him a little bit less money, but, and they can split it up a little bit differently so that they're not taking a big bath right now by moving on from him. So the trade is the ideal situation, more from a cap standpoint than a, what do you get in return standpoint? I think if they get like a sixth or seventh rounder, they'd be pretty happy. And then they get a lot of cap off the books, and they would, open an opportunity up for Derek Barnes. And they say Jalen Reeves Maven, but it's really Derek Barnes.
Now, you know, over the last several years, you know, this goes back into the Quinn era, they've given up Quandre Diggs for like a fifth round pick. And then what was Slay, a third round pick. And then now Collins is going to be like, so here are these quote unquote higher end players. Here are better defensive players. And you're just not getting the return. And NFL trades work differently than most other sports, but like the returns they're getting back for these guys aren't very strong, which really hurts like the construction of the roster.
Sure.
You know, over several years time, like, you know, hopefully we're getting to the end of this type of stuff, you know?
Yeah. I think contracts dictate some of the moves, like this move, the contract is going to dictate the value of the pick you get in return. Whereas I think with like Slay, he just wanted out and everyone knew he wanted out, right?
I get it, but that's not what I'm saying. It's just we're losing this value, we're losing value players. All these other factors into it, but they're not getting anything back for him.
Yeah.
And it's not like I'm saying like they should get back something for him. Like I understand how it works, they can't, but it hurts the line. It really hurts long term, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I think the way you fix that is you shed all of the big contracts of the players that you don't want, which they just did this offseason, which is why they have such a big cap, dead cap. And then you just don't make bad free agent decisions. You know what I mean? You don't sign guys to big free agent contracts. And that's,
And that's hopefully what we'll, we'll see what Holmes does.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Because this is a lot of this mess is still the Bob Quinn era mess. You know what I mean? That that Holmes is trying to clean up. And so we'll see. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But it's a it's an opportunity for some of the handpicked guys to step up. And I think Derek Barnes is going to be your starting Buck linebacker. And he's going to be thrown into the fire, just like a lot of the other rookies have been this season.
All right, we got to move on here. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
The Fatu Malifonwu and Tyrell Williams both moved to the IR.
Yeah, so Malifonwu, another rookie, was starting with Okuda out. His injury is pretty bad, quote-unquote pretty bad, which means he'll probably be out longer than the three-week minimum. And we'll see what happens when he returns. Right now, they're replacing him with, like, other guys that I don't think are as talented as he is. So if he does get healthy, when he does get healthy, I think he would have an opportunity to jump right back into the starting lineup. Whereas Okuda's injury, I think, is season-ending. Malifonwu is a guy who could come back a little bit later and earn a starting role. Williams is a concussion, and he was having a really difficult time with it, wasn't in the building basically for 2 weeks. So now they put him on IR to give him another three. When you have these kind of longer term concussions, they tend to linger, and he could miss even longer than those 3 weeks potentially, because, you know, the brain injuries are real tricky, right? So his status is very much up in the air. We don't really have a timetable on when he'll be back, outside of the fact that he's out a minimum of three more weeks.
All right, they signed cornerback Daryl Worley off the practice squad. He's going to see a lot of time on Sunday.
Yeah, because his competition is converted safety Bobby Price and undrafted free agent Jerry Jacobs, right? And yep. So he may start, or it's possible they want to get a better feel on Price and they start Price, because Price is the guy who took over after Malifonwu went down. So between Price and Worley, one of them is going to start. Worley is the guy with the boatload of experience. My kind of gut is that they're going to lean towards him.
All right, they signed linebacker Josh Woods off the Bears practice squad. I assume this has to do with Derek Barnes and Jalen Reeves may have been playing more on defense. They need another special teamer.
Yeah, and he's a very good special teamer, and he spent the last three seasons learning under Lions linebacker coach DeLone, right? Not DeLone. Why do I keep saying that?
Jake DeLone.
Yeah, DeLone. DeLone, the linebacker coach. DeLone was with the Bears last 3 years, and he and Woods played underneath him, or I guess for him, even though he mainly played special teams. He's a converted safety. He played safety at Maryland, converted to linebacker, added weight, found a groove on special teams, was valuable enough to be a reserve linebacker. He's going to come in. He's going to probably, like you said, take some special teams work off of the plate of Derek Barnes. Dan Campbell hinted that if Reeves Maven gets more playing time, he's going to need, you know, some relief on special teams as well. Problem is, Reeves Maven is just such a dynamic special teamer. I don't know if the value is there to try and give him too many defensive snaps, because you want to feed Derek Barnes anyways. But regardless, you hit the nail on the head. He's going to come in and play a big special teams role, I think, right off the bat. And like I said, he's experienced there, and he's good. I think his PFF grade last year on special teams was almost 90. So 89.4 or something like that. So, I mean, that's high marks for some special teams play.
All right. As you forecasted a few weeks ago, Ryan Santoso, the kicker, has been signed to the practice squad, but that's probably due to kicker Austin Seibert being added to the COVID-19 list, or at least in part.
Yeah, right. Now, see, we don't know what Seibert's vaccination status is. If he's vaccinated, what he needs is to be symptom-free and have two tests come back negative within 24 hours apart, right? That can happen at any time if he's vaccinated. If he's not vaccinated, then he's out like 10 days. And so we don't know his status, so therefore we don't know where, or we don't know his vaccination status, therefore we don't know what his availability is, right? So Santosa was brought in to the practice squad, filled in for, he took the spot Worley had on the practice squad. And with Seibert on the COVID list, that's a roster spot that they have open. So they have a couple of choices that they could do. They could, if he's going to miss the game, which is, it kind of feels that way, they could either just sign Santoso, they could elevate Santoso from the practice squad. But it sure seems like Santoso is going to be the kicker this week. Big leg, accuracy was always an issue. Had a good camp with the Giants, good enough that the Carolina Panthers traded for him. Then the Carolina Panthers released him in order to claim or to sign Zane Gonzalez off the Lions practice squad. And then, time is a flat circle and Santoso ends up replacing Gonzalez on the Lions practice squad. So we'll see how he goes. Like I said, people are going to love the leg because he can boom it.
All right. So the Lions kicker roulette continues. Let's move on to the injury report. As we talked about already, Jamie Collins is the only Lion that's out, but there's a ton that are questionable, starting with DeAndre Swift, who's got a groin injury.
Yeah. And that's the same one that he had last week. Right. So it's not overly concerning. He had it last week, played in a full game. They said they don't want to limit his snap. So I don't think that's an issue. But with Swift, you always got to have a little little bit of concern whenever he's on the list.
Wide receiver Khalif Raymond and his thigh.
Yeah, same thing. Like he got added late last week, played through it. So he seems like he's on track to play. Both Swift and Raymond had limited practices all week.
Michael Brockers with the shoulder.
Yeah, the same boat, right? He's had it lingering, still got limited practices in.
Kevin Strong, concussion in his thigh.
All right. So the
not a concussion in his thigh, concussion and his thigh.
So Strong was concussed in week one, missed week two, but then got on the right track where if you read the kind of like practice reports, it looks like he went through a non-padded or a non-contact practice on Wednesday, then a contact practice on Thursday. The fact that he practiced Friday means he likely cleared the protocols for the concussion and he was probably on track to, come off the report at the end of the week, but he then pops up with a thigh injury on Friday, which means he more than likely injured it on, after he cleared his concussion. And so that's just like a bit of bad luck, right? I expect the concussion label to come off. I expect, but the thigh issue, I have no idea how that's going to impact him. He can end up missing another week because of the thigh now.
All right. More from the defensive line, Trey Flowers, shoulder and a knee.
Yeah. And he did not practice this week. And that's concerning because he had a shoulder last week. Then he added a knee to it. He didn't practice. And all week they said, well, we're going to get an evaluation in on him later. We're going to get evaluation on him later. Well, later came and went and nothing happened. And so now you're out of practices. They're going to do a reeval on him on Saturday and then see what happens. Because I don't know. Not playing, not practicing all week is usually a bad sign for availability for the game. But you never know with a veteran. They might say, okay, you know what you're doing. You're going to be okay and play him anyways. It'll be interesting to see how the fallout on the edge goes because, they've been playing kind of a competition. They've been having a competition to try and see who can, fill the two reserve spots. And if Flowers isn't able to go, it sure seems like all the reserves will be active, but then who starts, right? That's a bit unclear.
All right. Romeo Okwara, his shoulder.
Yeah, I'm not as concerned about Romeo because he's in the same boat as Swift, Raymond, and Brockers. It's a lingering thing that he's been able to play and practice through.
Julian Okwara, neck.
Yeah, now that's a little concerning because that was a midweek add, right? Practiced in full on Wednesday, then he gets a neck injury on Thursday, limited him, and then but he practiced again on Friday, which is encouraging. Even though it was a limited practice, getting a practice in is a good sign that he'll be available. But again, he could miss as well. So Flowers is out and then Julian is out. Now you're down to just three edge guys. And while that's not the end of the world, it definitely, you know, limits your options. My guess, if Flowers can't go, is that Charles Harris gets the start, because he's the guy. He's won the competition the last couple of weeks and been able to be active, whereas Julian Aquara and Austin Bryant have split weeks. Austin played in week one, Julian played in week two. So I'm not sure if either of those guys are doing enough in practice consistently to knock Charles Harris off of his edge for the starting spot.
All right. That's it for the injuries. The protected practice squad for this week is Bruce Hector, Steven Montez, Jalen Elliott, and as you mentioned, Ryan Santos.
Right. So again, it's, you know, the same three guys that you had all year, and then Santoso because of the Siebert situation.
All right. Let's talk about the Packers real quick. As we mentioned earlier, 35-17 loss. Although Lions went in to halftime with 17-14 lead. Offensive line looked good, and everybody with the questioning of Aaron Rodgers and the Packers falling apart had continued at that
point. Yeah, I mean, look, which broadcast did you watch?
I watched the Peyton and Eli broadcast on ESPN too.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, oh yeah, I think that's the way we're headed for sports commentating. Although, like, they're good, even though Eli didn't even really talk that much, but like, there's going to be a whole lot of bad versions of that, like as everybody tries to pile on. The same thing.
When they had Gronk on, that was the bad version of that. my gosh.
Well, you know, he's playing a character. He's got to play a character.
Yes.
Because that's his future. After he's done with football, he's going to be that version of Rob Gronkowski in commercials and on television and stuff. He's got to keep it up.
He's pulling the John Madden off right now, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, I feel like Eli doesn't like to step on the guest toes. And so that's why he was a little quieter. I enjoyed Eli, and I'm interested. I actually think, I don't know. They were talking about having more broadcasts. So it's possible they got a full season.
They only had three, right? But
yeah,
everybody, it was the highest rated alternate broadcast of anything in cable history, which that's very narrow that you're going down to there, but
right.
Yeah. I think it'll only grow. I think that's a good format.
Yeah. I hope they don't get hokey though with they kind of did. I mean, my goodness. And Brett Favre, if you know that you're going to come on as an analyst to talk about the game, please watch the first half of the game.
No, that's Brett Favre. Like, I think that's what Brett Favre's always like. He's not watching NFL games, you know.
Yeah, but look, if you're coming on to analyze what's happened, you could spend an hour and a half watching the first. It was an hour.
He blamed setting up the equipment, right? Which I'm sure there were ESPN people there setting up the equipment for him. I don't think Brett was messing around with his laptop, you know.
Yeah, I have some opinions on what I think Brett Favre was doing. all right, back to the actual game. Look, the Hockenson is still playing well. Swift and Williams are dynamic. And those three are like 80% of the offense.
The offense, right there.
Yeah, right. That's really it. Raymond was banged
Cephas
up.
Cephas played a little bit. I mean, you know, Goff wants to get the ball to Cephas a little bit.
You know, he's a good young player that brings something different, and he's willing to fight for the ball, and which it's hard to get. Like Raymond, just because of his size, isn't there. St. Brown is in the slot. And I think then Trinity Benson's on the smaller side as well. So Cephas gives them an option of being able to really compete for the ball, you know? And so Goff leaned on that. And I mean, Cephas got the start in place of Tyrell Williams. And then, we kind of thought it was going to be Benson, but I think after that opening drive, he became a hot hand, right? And that's what earned him more playing time. He actually led all the receivers. So, 51 yards and a touchdown, I think, on that opening drive, which was nice. So the Lions needed something like that. And it's good for a young player to get more time like that as well. So I thought Cephas played well. I was disappointed in the rest of the receivers. I'd like to see more from them. Boy, I'd love to see some more swagger from Amon-Ra St. Brown, especially against his brother's team. I thought we would have saw a little bit more of that swagger that we saw in training camp, but that still is just kind of sitting there under the surface. But yeah, the backs look good. The offensive line looked good. Hockenson, 2 weeks in a row where he has 8 receptions and a touchdown, which is something that's only happened, I think, a couple of times before from a tight end. If he can get 8 receptions and a touchdown against the Ravens, he'll be the first tight end in NFL history to pull that off. So, you know, he seems to be the guy, and to no one's surprise. Right. Yeah. And he's stepping up, which is a good thing. So
yeah, he's a good player.
Yeah. So that's the offense, right? The offense was looking good. The defense is still getting kind of
still getting its bearings.
Yeah.
They only gave up 4 touchdowns to Aaron Jones.
Yeah.
You know,
well, a lot of that, I look, and the talent is one thing, and the linebacker talent just wasn't there. Obviously, that's what, and like we said, it most likely was the prompt for the Jamie Collins stuff here. But I think Aaron Glenn is still getting his bearings. You know what I mean? Sure. While the defense is still getting, I do think Aaron Glenn, like he was in
not a whole year, they're going to be bad. It's not like this team's sneaking into the playoffs.
Yeah. And, you know, and look, we're rightfully very high on Aaron Glenn. But there were some adjustments that probably needed to happen faster, and he didn't do it. You know, we talked about this last week. They were going to go into cover 2 when they wanted to get Adams shut down, right? And when Adams goes into the slot, which he did a lot, that you go to cover 2, and then you can use those safeties over the top to cover the slot. And then when they get Adams on the outside, I'm sorry, when you get Adams on the outside, you're going into cover 2. That way you have your safety over the top to kind of go against those deep throws and whatnot. And then when he's in the slot, you can shift to more cover 1. And the problem was, is it was just happening at the wrong times, right? And I think the Packers were, you can give the Packers praise for adjusting to that properly.
They
right?
knew what to do.
Yeah. When they saw a certain coverage scheme, they made an adjust. I think they were making the correct adjustments. And so
that's why the second half was totally different than the first half.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I think they were purposeful in trying to get Adams up against Melifonwu as well, because they wanted to get him on the rookie. And I mean, they got him on the rookie in the slot too. And AJ Parker, problem is AJ Parker. I mean, both rookies look confident. You know, I didn't think they looked lost, or, you know, they didn't look like the stage was too big for them. AJ Parker continues to play well, and he sees things before they're happening, which is great. Melifonwu, I thought, played well against Adams up until that, you know, that last play where he got hurt. But, you know, Adams used to torch Darius Slay. You know what I mean? Like, he's the best receiver in the league, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So like, I was encouraged by how well they did, and disappointed that Melifonwu ends his day like that, because I thought he was playing well.
Yeah. Well, he was playing well, and just a tough team to stop for the Lions. You know, sure. this is kryptonite, and the Packers are going to get it on track, and then they're going to waltz to the division title. So we got to go back to the offense. Goff and his turnovers.
Well, you know, that's part of the third quarter, right? That's part of that. You know, in week 1, it happened at the end of the second quarter. Now in week 2, it happened at the end of the third quarter. You go for it on 4th down and you don't get it.
Bad play call. But that's a concern for Anthony Lynn, but whatever, you know.
No, but see, look, and I mean, a lot of what we're talking about here is that the coaches.
Lynn, what did I say? Quinn, go ahead.
You know, you said Lynn, I thought.
Okay, all right.
But like Lynn is still getting his feet back onto the coordinator calling, play calling duties. Glenn is still very new. I think Lynn has been ahead as far as making adjustments. I think Glenn's going to take some time. And that's part of it. But, look, I didn't like the play call either. There's a bunch of other plays that are much more high efficient, they have better probability of being successful than that one. And then you get the
Peyton
ball back.
Was upset.
What's that?
Peyton Manning was upset.
Oh, yeah.
That play
well, call. Of course. Yeah. He was along with every other Lions fan. but then, you know, the Packers score. And then the Lions get the ball back, and then they immediately fumble, right? And then that puts the Packers in this great spot. They score immediately again. Then the Lions get the ball back and they start to drive. They go down the field, but now the ball's wet. And on a critical third down, the ball slips out of Jared Goff's hand. And while the Lions get the ball back, they're now at fourth and 12 instead of fourth and short. And now it's a much more difficult conversion. So now they don't try it. They punt. And when they punted, that was essentially like, all right, we throw our hands up in the air and that's the game. Right. So it was that short little gap of time where no conversion, fumble, and then fumble to put you out of position that really, you know, was the what turned the tide in this game. Because they were, even when those first two happened, they were still within striking range. It was still like a two-score game, but they were close and they were driving. And when that ball slips out of his hands, that was the turning point, right? That was the last kind of straw. And you could tell this team isn't built to come back when you're that far behind.
All right, let's talk about the Ravens. They play on Sunday, 1 p.m. on Fox. It's on CBS this week. I just checked FanDuel. Ravens are 7.5-point favorites. Referee is going to be Scott Novak. The TV crew, we get Greg Gumbel, yeah. Adam Archuleta, AJ Ross. So we get a better TV crew, but that's because it's the Ravens.
At home, which is nice, and maybe that'll give the Lions a little bit more comfort level, I guess, right?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know if it's gonna make that big of a difference.
No, but you know what?
Over under 50.5.
Yeah, 50. Yeah, yep. That seems
so. That's right. Lower. That's lower than both Lions and Ravens games from last week.
Yeah, and that's close to my projected score. So,
all right, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, no, I'm all right. I feel okay. I don't know. When I made my score projection, I was like, this feels low, but I'm gonna stick with it. So we'll see. I don't know. Now I'm second guessing myself.
All right, the silver lining for the Lions: the Ravens have a bunch of injury issues. They have a COVID positive test, so we're gonna have some starters out for the Ravens, starting with left tackle Ronnie Stanley. He was out against the Chiefs, right? They just moved Villanueva over to left tackle.
Yes, correct. And then they took Patrick Mekhi, they put Patrick Mekhi over at right tackle. I think they actually platooned him with someone else as well, but Mekhi is the guy who got the majority of the snaps there. And they still looked fine, which is a testament to the play calling and like preparation. But yeah, like losing Stanley, you would think would be a big deal, but they were able to get past it.
They were able to have a veteran tackle who's moved to right tackle. Very interesting scenario over in Baltimore, because they signed Alejandro Villanueva, right? Who was the left tackle with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Correct.
They've moved him to right tackle. And now he's forced back over to the left. But only interesting in the fact that the argument that's going on about Sewell and Taylor Decker, and what's going to do Decker when he returns, and what we talked about last week. Defensive end Derek Wolfe also has replaced it, Justin Matabukwe.
Yeah, so Derek Wolfe is another injured player. So both Stanley and Wolfe are injured. But Matabukwe is part of the COVID fallout. So let me just kind of like explain how this works, because it gets a little complicated with the vaccination rules within the NFL. A backup outside linebacker who is, I guess, it's like a rush out linebacker in the Ravens game, Jalen Ferguson. He's in his third year in the league. He tested positive for COVID. Okay. Now, we don't know his vaccination status. So like Siebert, he's a guy who, if he clears, if he doesn't have symptoms and he's vaccinated and he has two negative tests 24 hours apart, he can be cleared to come back to the game, for the game. But he had a close contact with seven other guys, all right, on the Ravens. Now, the way it works is if you're vaccinated, close contact does not matter, and therefore you're eligible to play. But if you are not vaccinated, then you can be labeled close contact and you must sit out 5 days. All right. So Matt Ebukwe, Justin Houston, and Brandon Williams are all close contact labeled, which means they are, because they got the label, means that they're unvaccinated, and which means they will be out 5 days, which means they will miss the Lions game. Now for Ferguson, he's a third string linebacker, no big deal. He might actually come back, but Williams is their starting nose tackle. Justin Houston is their starting rush linebacker. And Matt Ebukwe was starting in place of Derek Wolfe. And now both of them are out. So now they are on to their third defensive end, which is Broderick Washington, and their nose tackle is out. So they're having to rely on Justin Ellis. So Washington and Ellis will be most likely starting alongside Calais Campbell. And then they have no reserves on the interior defensive line. And so
that's practice squad guys.
They're going to have to call up practice squad guys. So they're going to get four slots open if all four of these guys miss. And they're going to have to bring practice squad guys up. But those practice squad guys are probably not going to start over the guys that are currently on the active roster, right? So you're going to have a backup nose tackle, a third string defensive end, and then Calais Campbell on the interior defensive line. And you're replacing Justin Houston. Now, Justin Houston isn't, they have a ready-made replacement because Owe, the first round pick that they got out of Penn State last year, he is a backup right now. So he'll start with Tyrus Bowser, and Houston, the loss of Houston won't be that significant, but the depth at outside on the edge is going to be gone as well. So that interior defensive line is going to have a bunch of replacements or practice squad level players. This is where the offensive line for the Lions are really going to have their opportunity to do something, because this outbreak has really kind of hamstrung them, and the vaccination status of some of the other guys that were considered close contact, but they were vaccinated, that saves them from losing another like four players. Right. And so it could have been bad, but the Ravens have like 90% of their team vaccinated. But the unfortunate part for them is that, three of their guys that were not were all close contact, and two of them were starters. So it's going to put them in a bit of a bad spot.
All right. Also defensively, since we've been talking about defense, let's talk about the defensive back. You gave the breakdown of the front seven, but how's Goff going to attack the secondary?
Yeah, look, it's you got to go through Hawk, right? You have to.
Right.
And it's just a matter of who's going to cover him, right? Like, I don't think Malik Harrison, one of their inside linebackers, is there. Patrick Queen could be the guy to do it. There's a lot of people that really like Patrick Queen quite a bit. He's fast and got some movement, but the odds are they're probably going to have to lean more on like some safeties and to try and go after Hawk. But one of their safeties, Deshaun Elliott, is coming off a concussion. Now, a concussion that he had that kept him out of practice Wednesday and Thursday, but then all of a sudden he was a full participant on Friday, which seems a bit unusual because you're supposed to go through a non-contact practice first, and he didn't. And maybe the Ravens are just labeling it weird. Like maybe he wasn't in a contact, but they just called it full. In which case, if that's the case, he has to clear something on Saturday before they travel. So if Elliott can't clear, that could be a problem for them. But Chuck Clark is another, their other safety. He's pretty good. I still think they're, whether Elliott's there or not, they're going to have a problem going after Hawk. Now, their nickel, Tavon Young, was also injured, but he looks like he's on track to play. Anthony Everett and Marlon Humphrey are your other outside corners. They're excellent. Marlon Humphrey is one of the better corners in the league. Whoever he matches up against is really going to, he's going to have an advantage over anyone. And so And then, you know, Jimmy Smith, who was a longtime starter for them, is now a reserve. He's a little bit banged up as well. So this defense is, has some holes in it, right? Their best players, Calais Campbell, who's 35, Justin Houston, who isn't playing. And then, like I said, Humphrey is really their best player. So we'll see what happens. But the opportunity is there for the Lions to you know, put up some points if they find the right matchups. Offensive line will be massive in this one. If he can buy Jared Goff time, if he can create a run game, if he can look like he did in the first half, then you can keep this game close. Close.
All right. Yeah, relatively close. So, okay, so if the Lions can score points, can they outscore the Ravens offense?
Yeah, that's the trick, right?
Ravens offense is going to be not full speed, of course, because of their whole running back situation, but Tyson Williams has filled in quite admirably for Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins. He already has 142 yards rushing in a couple of games. They got Latavius Murray and Devonta Freeman, some old, you know, old names from old, yeah, you know, other teams, yeah, new places.
And the scheme is just really, it's a really good fit for running backs. The running scheme is just there. And then,
and you have Lamar Jackson.
Then the quarterback makes
handling the running load game for you.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And yeah, he makes everything easier in the run game as well. They have the number two run offense in the league, according to DVOA right now. Lions number four rushing offense, according to DVOA, which is something we haven't seen in decades.
Not sure. Yes, that's since Barry retired.
But the Ravens are excellent. And yes, a lot of that is because of Lamar. And then the attention that you have to give Lamar creates lighter boxes. And then that opens it up for Tyson Williams, right? So Williams is good. He's got some speed. Murray and Freeman are, like you said, the old veterans. And just give them some depth because, you know, J.K. Dobbins, their other starter, he's out, right? So on IR, they got a lot of IR guys, just like the Lions do. So they're still going to be able to run. That's just the way the scheme is. So even with Ronnie Stanley out, it's going to be a tall task in order to try and man up against the Ravens when they want to run. You're going to have to play gap discipline. The Ravens operate this like a pistol system, right? For those who aren't familiar with the pistol. A pistol is when the quarterback lines up kind of not as deep as a shotgun, but also not under center. He lines up kind of in between, right? And that in between allows them to do a lot of read options and makes life a little bit more difficult on the defense because things happen a little bit faster. So your linebackers have to be gap sound. Your defensive linemen have to be able to set the edge and then hold their gaps as well. And that's how you try and contain Lamar, right? It's a tall order, though, right? Because, I mean, even if he's not running the ball, he can still chuck it. And his accuracy isn't, you know, elite, but everything else about him is, right? So he becomes very problematic. But, yeah, stopping the run is going to be really something they have to do with discipline. And you're going to be asking a lot of rookies to stay disciplined against a strong Ravens offense. Because, you know, look, McNeil, Onzerike, Barnes, those guys are all going to be asked to be a very mature version of themselves in this game.
All right, passing attack. Sammy Watkins, Marquise Brown are the wide receivers. Mark Andrews is the tight end. Good tight end.
Yeah.
Not the level of Hockenson, but he's pretty close.
Yeah, and Marquise Brown has been hurt. He was limited, then he didn't participate, then he was back to limited. Yeah, him and Watkins are their starters because first-round pick Rashad Bateman, or first or second, I forget, but Rashad Bateman out of Minnesota, he is injured and unable to play. Miles Boykin, another one of their high draft picks, that receiver is also on injured reserve. So they're missing a couple of those guys as well. But they're still able to get it done. And again, it's a lot of credit to, you know, the scheme. Now, if you can get Lamar to force, you know, some throws and you're opportunistic, you know, you can get some turnovers. I mean, you saw that with the Chiefs last week. The Chiefs got a couple of turnovers when, you know, Lamar was trying to, you know, force something down the field. And so who knows if the Lions are ever going to be able to put them in that situation, but the Chiefs did, and they got some turnovers out of it. The receivers, though, even though they're missing their couple starters, they still have some options, especially speed options out there. And like you said, Mark Andrews is a very talented tight end.
All right. And then we already talked a little bit about the offensive line, Villanueva, but the loss of Ronnie Stanley, Villanueva over at left tackle, Patrick McCary at right tackle. They do have Kevin Zeitler, longtime Cincinnati Bengal, at right guard, Bradley Bozeman manning the middle, and Ben Powers on the left side.
Yeah,
Bozeman. Do you have anything to mention about the interior line? Obviously, they're good since they can run the ball so well.
Yeah, Bozeman and Zeitler are both above average players. Cleveland is an ascending player, former tackle, who I liked as well. They it's a good offensive line.
Kicker's Justin Tucker.
And he's best in the league.
Yeah. Yep. For many, many years. Sam Cook's the punter. That's really all to say. That, you know, the Ravens, they beat Kansas City last week. Right. So it's going to be a tall order for the Lions on Sunday.
Yeah, and, you know, look, as we say every week, there's opportunities that are there, right? It's just a matter of
executing them.
Exactly.
And game planning for them and adjusting when, you know, things get a little off kilter.
Yep, and we're going to say this all season. Those opportunities are there. You just have to have everything clicking in the right way, right? That's the trick. You got to have your coordinators calling the right plays, and you got to have your young, talented, team executing, you know, without error. And that's a tough ask in this league. And I think we're going to see a lot of games like we've seen the last 2 weeks, where there's a half of football where you see that they can be good. And then there's another half of football where you're like, we're still a year away. Right. Ravens are going to be tough. When you go forward, you know, you get a little easier when you get into the division against the Bears and the Vikings the next 2 weeks, then the Bengals, and then they're going to be in Los Angeles come week 7. So
it's going to be the big one.
Yeah. but for now, this is the last of the really, really difficult games. Then they get a little bit more familiar coming up. But all right. So my projection was 8 points off. Your projection was 7 points off. You got the victory. And so therefore we are 1-1 going into week 3. I've already made my projection. That's going to be a theme this year, that I'm going to have mine already done because I have to for POD ahead of time. And so I don't want to start throwing out multiple versions of my projection. So I'm going to stick with the same projection across all the mediums here. I've got my score, but since you won, you get to go first. And
tell Ravens 33-17.
33-17.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I tell you what, you're not far off. I went with Ravens 30, Lions 21. All right. So we're not too far off. Gut feeling, we're both low.
Probably. I think the Ravens, I like, because it's well, they gave up 35 last week. They gave up 41 in week 1. Like,
yeah.
I guess they could give up 35 points every week, but like there's going to be some games mixed in where they're not going to give up 35. They're like, because I don't want to keep putting them giving up that many points, because there's going to be weeks where they don't. And the Ravens could call off the dogs early in this game, because I don't think like this team is more set up to like build a big lead early. The Ravens are, I think, the way this game sets up compared to the Packers. We'll see.
The logic in my thinking here is that the Ravens will score, but the Lions are going to have an advantage trying to run the ball, and therefore they're going to run the ball.
Yeah,
and they're going to have some. Early. Yeah, they're exactly. They're going to slow the game down. They're going to try and, you know, just manage time. I think the Ravens have enough missing pieces on their defense that it could afford the Lions an opportunity to score 2 or 3 times. I'm going with 3. And then if they slow the game down, limit the opportunities, the Ravens will score, you know, on all but one possession, but it still only gets him out to 30 points because I think the whole it's just going to be a fast game with a lot of running on both sides of the ball. So that's that. Oh, you know what? I've been neglectful on checking our
we got a ratings boost. We added a couple in the last week.
Thank you for picking that slack up on my end. That's my fault. So a couple more reviews are helpful. Patreon's still going strong. I've been building my board up, trying to get an update there when I can. I'm still in the process of it. It's just everything's taken longer this year. But it's super supportive, super helpful, and it helps us keeping these podcasts going. And we thank everyone for all that they're doing to help us.
We had two written reviews on Saturday and one on Monday. Saturday was Chaz Bro and SF Stampede 23. On Monday, Robert D6. They were all excellent reviews.
Nice. Nice. Thank you. All right.
That's it. Except for one of them, but it had to do with Jeremy. So.
Oh, man. I don't like.
I don't know. I'd rather have Jeremy here. So if we made like a joke, like he could, you know, he could be, I don't want to read this guy's review. I'd give Jeremy a chance to like rebut himself.
Well, look, I don't think
everybody's going to love him. I get it.
Look, Jeremy came in and helped us out.
Yeah. He's wonderful. Like, I can say anything bad about, but like, I know like the people that listen, they listen to us for a reason. And then they don't like, you know, just like how you and me are with things. I'm sure. Yeah. Like we don't like listening to certain people talk, you know,
sure.
And it's, when it infiltrates our show, I get a laugh out of this, you know.
Look, I think the bottom line, the feedback that I got wasn't so much that it was Jeremy and that it was more that people were missing Joe Kania. And so
I totally get that.
That's the message I got because, yeah, like you said, Jeremy is fantastic and he did an excellent job. And, but you know, people need Joe Kania when they can get them. And so let's keep putting these out so we can keep giving people what they want.
Yeah. Hopefully things start going a little smoother. So yeah, it's all right. And yeah. And hey, everybody, thanks for the reviews, positive or negative. Keep them coming. It was a positive review.
Yes.
You know, it's just, there was a note about Jeremy. All right.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone.
That's it. This podcast has come to a crashing halt. All right. That's all we got for this week. Let's hope for the best on Sunday. But you heard what Eric and I thought. We don't think it's going to be the best. So until next time, let's go Lions.